Okay, welcome to the Shir Rabbeinu B'chai Parshas Vayakel. And I guess this year, with being an Ibra Yor, it affords us the opportunity to go a little bit slower through Rabbeinu B'chai. We can have Vayakel this week, Pekudei next week, and all the double Parshios and Vayikra also are stretched out a little bit, so it's the more the merrier, more opportunities to go through the various Shtiklach. So I wanted to start with the very first Shtikl that he has, right after the Mishlei section, where it begins, Vayakel Moshe, this is Perek Lamed Hei, Pasuk Aleph, page Shin Samich Zayin in the Chevelle edition. Vayakel Moshe es kol hadas b'nei Yisrael v'yomer aleihem, eila hadvarim asher tziva Hashem la'asos osam. Says Rabbeinu B'chaim, tistakel b'starim eila, if you go through these particular parshios, you know, towards the second half of Shmos, we find an awful lot of times that the Mishkan and its Kalim are listed off in some kind of order. And he goes to tell us exactly how many times they're listed. Right? The Ribbono Shel Olam mentions the listing of the Kalim twice to Moshe Rabbeinu. Back in Pashas Truma, he went through the various Kalim of the Mishkan at length. The Chazar v'iskiru derech klal v'chisisa v'parshas re'ei korasi b'shem. And then last week, in the beginning of Parshas Kisisa, before we got to the Ma'aseh Ha'egel, the Torah also lists off the various different kalim in the parsha that begins Perek Lamed Aleph by Dabar Hashem Moshe Leimo re'ei korasi b'shem b'tzalel ben Uri ben Chur l'mata Yehuda. I taught Bezalel how to make all of the aspects of the Mishkan, and then it lists them off again. Eis Oel Moed, V'es Ha'aron Lo'edos, Es HaKapares, Asher Olav, Es HaShulchan, Es HaMenorah HaTzohara, Mis Mizbach HaKtares, Es Mizbach HaOlav, Es Bigdei Yastra, Es Bigdei HaKodesh. It goes through the whole listing of the parts of the Mishkan. And here too, right off the bat, we wonder, why does the Torah have to list the various Kalim of the Mishkan? It would have been perfectly fine on the surface to just say, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I appointed Bezalel to do all of the stuff that I talked about back in Parshas Truma, right? There doesn't need to be an itemized list again. That's the second time. But then, you know, we encounter it again. Shlishis, hu shizkiru Moshe ato, l'chol yisrael b'derech klal, v'tziva osam alo v'omro, v'chol chacham le'vochem yovo v'yasu, eis kol asher tziva Hashem, es ha-mishkan es alo. Here too, in the beginning of Parshas Vayakel, there's a whole listing again of all of the different components of the Mishkan. You know, beginning in Pasuk Yud in Perek Lamed Hei, V'chol Chacham Lev Bochem Yovol V'Yasu Eis Kol Asher Tziva Hashem. All of the artisans should come and execute that which Hakadosh Baruch Hu commanded. Es HaMishkan, Es Olov, Es Michseyu, Es Krasov, Es Krasov. Again, the whole 9 yards. We're told all of the kalim and the parts of the Mishkan are mentioned. And again, you think it would have been sufficient to say V'chol Chacham Lev Bochem Yovol V'Yasu Eis Kol Asher Tziva Hashem and stop. You know, I know what Hakadosh Baruch Hu commanded us to do. We just learned about it in Parshas Truma and Tetzav.
Right. It's kind of gracious that the Torah repeats it also like more than once, think like 3 times about the creation.
Right, but here it's even more excessive. So this is the third time that the Torah is mentioning the list of the various different kalim. Revius was sipur atorah achar maisa, and then later on we have how once the kalim have been built, they're also delineated. Hu shekasu vayasu kol chacham leib yosei hamalacha. A little bit later on in Perek Lamed Vav, in this week's parasha, right, beginning of Revi, Vayasu kochacham leiv beosei hamalacha es hamishkan esu yirios. Right, it describes again at length how everything was made. Again, this is a famous kasha that everybody has. What's Parshas Vayakel doing here in Chumash? I mean, Parshas Vayakel is basically just, they did everything that they were commanded to do back in Parshas Truma. So this is the fourth time that we have a delineated list of all of the aspects of the Mishkan. And finally, Chamishas, Achash Lishma Kol HaMalacha, B'Parshas Vayaviu Es HaMishkan El Moshe, at the very end of Pekudei, in Perek Lamed Tes, after everything has been done, so all of the kelim are mentioned once more. Right? In Perek Lamed Tes, again, the beginning of Revi in Pekudei, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Vayoviu es HaMishkan El Moshe, they brought the Mishkan to Moshe. And again, you have a whole list of everything. Esa all the Eskol Kelov, Cross of Kroshov, Brichov, Amudov, Adonov, Ves Michtei Oris Ha'elim, Esa Ron Ha'idus Ves Badov, Esa Shulchov Eskol Kelov, Esa Menorah Atahorah Esnei Rosel, etc., etc. Okay, we get it. We understand what was in the Mishkan. By this time, this is the fifth time that the Kelim of the Mishkan and all of its parts have been delineated in this way. Why does this have to be repeated so many times? So it says the Rabbeinu B'chai as follows: V'hoya ha'inyan l'haskiru chamisha pa'amim hakol l'maylas ha'mishkan v'derech chiba. Mentioning the Mishkan and all of its kelim five times, which on the surface is totally unnecessary, is to show the love that the Ribbono Shel Olam has for the Mishkan and the esteem that the Ribbono Shel Olam has in the Mishkan. When something is esteemed, it's mentioned over and over again. Kishem shematzino shehizkar hakosel chamisha pa'amim Yisrael b'pasuk echad b'seder ba'alozcha hu shekosel v'etnos ha'levim nesunim la'aron levon v'tov b'nei Yisrael la'avodis avodis b'nei Yisrael b'yolmoy l'chakro b'nei Yisrael lo'iyah b'nei Yisrael negev b'geshes b'nei Yisrael la'kodesh. Rashi points this out in Parshas Ba'alozcha, that there's a pasuk there in Parshas Ba'alozcha that mentions Yisrael five times. Right? And again, this is to show the chiba, the love that the Ribbono Shel Olam has for Klal Yisrael. Somehow that chiba is associated with the number five. The number five is a magic number, so to speak, to indicate the idea of love and respect. Vakol derech chiba umayla. The Darshu Chazal in Vayikra Rabba say, L'mazeh domeh, l'melech sheshalach b'no leveis ha-sefer. Right, a king sends his son to school. Kishabo shoal, ochal biri, shasa biri, domach biri, osa biri leve sifra, osa biri mebe sifra. Right, the king, when he comes to inquire after his son, asks all kinds of things from the malamed that are all kind of extraneous. Did my kid come to school? Yeah, I think so. I mean, did he come home from school? Yeah. Did he eat in school? That's how it is, right? But the when you're interested in something, you just keep talking and talking about it, and that shows the tremendous love that you have for it. So the Ribbono Shel Olam keeps mentioning Yisrael five times. He keeps mentioning the Mishkan and his Kelim over and over and over again to show us how important, how beloved the Mishkan actually is. V'chein darshu razal b'masha richa Torah b'sipur Eliezer. She called Dvarav Kulim. A very, very famous statement of Chazal as well, in Parshas Chayisara, when Eliezer Eved Avraham shows up in Haran and basically repeats the entire story of how he met Rivka and how he's on his shlichus. You know, he goes through the whole thing a second time. And Chazal comment, Yofes Sichas Avdei Ovos Levrei HaKadosh Baruch Mitarosim Shalbonim. You know, the God has such a love for the, you know, the conversation, the, so to speak, the idle speech of even the servants of the Avos, to the extent to which Eliezer's whole speech is repeated, you know, at length. Shrei b'parshas Eliezer called about kfulim, v'shnai v'shlosh adapim hu amura, v'kam mitzvus batara tliyos ba'osachos v'ksiva achas v'hinein gufei Torah. There are huge portions of halacha that are just hinted at in the Chumash, and the Torah takes, you know, two or three columns to describe, you know, at length the whole story of Eliezer. Repetition is the Torah's way of showing love. Right? So, you know, I think a lot of commentators focus on this idea. And again, this is a basic kasha that we have when reading Chumash. You know, what are Parshas Vayakel Pekudei doing there? I mean, Vayakel Pekudei really could have been summarized more or less in about a paragraph. You know, the Ribbono Shel Olam told Klal Yisrael to build the Mishkan, and they built the Mishkan. And if you want to know how they built the Mishkan, refer back to Parshas Truma and Tetzaveh, whatever it says over there, that's exactly what they did. And we could have saved the whole Parshas Vayakel Pekudei. I mean, most of Vayakel Pekudei is just saying, whatever they were told to do in the previous Parshas, they did everything. So, again, there are various different approaches to this question. The approach of Rabbeinu B'chai is somewhat unique in that he points out it's not just that the Torah repeats it a second time. The Torah really has gone through, in a certain sense, the delineation of the Mishnah's Kalim five times, and five is the number which is associated with love, with Chiba, and with Milo, with the tremendous respect that he has for the Mishkan. So clearly that number five is one that plays out in a lot of areas of Torah. I mean, the most obvious being Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Why is the Torah divided into five Chumashim? Right? I mean, that on a certain level, that's an arbitrary number. Why not, you know, why not have two books, you know, or break it up into seven ways, or nine ways? I mean, you know, who came up with the idea of dividing Chumash, you know, into the Chamisha Chumshei Torah into a five-part division? One might suggest, based on the Rabbeinu B'chaye, that this five-part division of Torah is a way of showing the chiba that God has for the Torah itself. When you break something up into five, or when you have five components, that's a magic number that speaks of chiba and maila. The same with the Aseres HaDibros. The fact that the Aseres HaDibros are divided five ways, and you know, many midrashim say that the five dibros on Luach A are linked in many different ways to the five dibros that are on Luach B. Right, so that idea also that there are five, you know, basic concepts or ideas which are being given over to Moshe Rabbeinu with Har Sinai, that you know, that may speak of this idea of chiba and maila as well, which he's developing is something we should pick up on whenever we see the number five, you know, playing a certain role. Right, so it's an interesting way of dealing with the what's stated over here. Yeah.
Just the repetition, not five, but the second is that they did exactly. In other words, it's also the Jewish people's love for God. They followed exactly what he said. So that's the repetition.
Right.
So that people can learn a lesson from this. Exactly.
Right.
Every single millimeter of The five is found in the five, it's found in several places. One of them is Hashem gave us the blessing of five parts.
Okay. Very, very nice. Very nice. Yeah.
When was the division made?
I think that's part of the revelation as well. You know, that's divided into five chumash. So speaking of Shabbos, I want to see the next piece in Beis, where, again, as we know, the very opening psukim in the Sedra talk about Shabbos. Moshe Rabbeinu gathers Klal Yisrael together, and he says, "Sheshes yomim te'asam malacha b'yom ashviyi alachem kodesh Shabbos shabbosom Hashem." Right? Kol ha'osa b'malacha yumos osevaru esh b'chamosh v'oseichem b'yom ha'Shabbos. Right? You should work for 6 days, rest on the seventh day. So the Rebbe Bechaim makes an interesting observation over here. He says, "Lo motzinu shehizir Moshe al Shabbos b'kan." Back in Parshas Kisisa, there was also a reference to Shabbos, but Rabbeinu B'chaye claims that Parsha of Shabbos in Kisisa is far more esoteric. It's a much deeper appreciation of Shabbos, which Moshe Rabbeinu shares with the Jewish people, as opposed to what he says here in Vayakel, where basically he says, you know, there's this thing called Shabbos, it comes every seventh day, and you should keep it. Right? He'll elaborate on that a little bit more as we go through, but that's the basic idea which he wants to present. The Parsha of Shabbos in Kisisa is deep, the Parsha of Shabbos in Vayakel is much more superficial. Al-Kain Nir-Eli, Shinir Mazlonu Bekan, She'en Legalos in Yonim Nisarim Bahamon. So says Rabbi Bechai, very interesting take on it. He says, if you accept this premise, which we'll have to develop in a few moments, but if you accept this premise, that back in Parshas Kisisa, Shabbos was discussed on a much deeper, more esoteric level, And here Shabbos is being discussed on a much more simple level. So what's the difference? So says the Rabbi Rabbi Chai, I'll tell you the difference. Here, the discussion of Shabbos is introduced by Vayakel Moshe as Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael. Here, he was speaking to the masses. Back in Parashas Kisiso, he was speaking to the elite. And when you speak to the masses, says Rabbi Rabbi Chai, you shouldn't give over all of the esoteric information that you give over when you're speaking to the elite. Ein legalos in yonim nistarim bahamon. Those things that are hidden and esoteric should not be shared with the masses when it comes to Torah learning.
Why?
Because they may distort them, right? Or they may misunderstand them, right? So in other words, when you're talking to people, you have to talk to people on their level. That's the idea Rabbi Bechai is saying. When you're talking to the masses, you tell them there's something called Shabbos. You have to keep Shabbos, right? You get too complicated, they won't understand you, they won't follow you, they'll misunderstand you, they won't keep Shabbos at all, you know, they'll keep Shabbos mistakenly, they won't understand what it's all about. Yeah, you have to talk to people on their level. You know, the esoteric things should be reserved for people who are ready for the esoteric things. So V'lachach Hiskir Lamala, that's why it says earlier, Achas Shabsosai Tishmaru, Shein Remez L'Zachar V'Shamar. He explained earlier that when it says Achas Shabsosai Tishmaru, you should guard my Shabbosos, plural. So why is it called Shabbosos? Right? So you could say, well, it means keep every single Shabbos. But I mean, we understand that, right? You know, we understand that if you're going to keep Shabbos, you're going to keep it every week. It's not like a one-time activity. Shabsosai B'Lashon Rabbim, says Rabbi Rabbi, hints to the idea of Zachar V'Shamor acting together, the dual aspect of Shabbos. The Amar Shmartem Es HaShabbos, furthermore, earlier it says you should guard Shabbos, V'Lo Amar Es Yom HaShabbos. It doesn't say over there you should guard or keep the day of Shabbos. B'Fishu B'Shabbos Ho'El Yonah. Because this is referring to the heavenly idea of Shabbos. In other words, not just that you keep Shabbos here on earth, but if you guard Shabbos, you will be guarding a concept known as Shabbos, the Shabbos El Yono, the Yom Shekulo Shabbos, the idea of Shabbos as it relates to heavenly matters. And that's the Shomu Bnei Yisrael HaShabbos Lasos is HaShabbos. That's what it means when we say the famous pasuk, Klal Yisrael should guard Shabbos. In order to create Shabbos, by guarding Shabbos here on earth, we're creating a Shabbos for ourselves. La'asid lavo in Olam Haba, which is a Yom Shekulo Shabbos, our Shabbos here creates a Shabbos up there. Kimashu Ramasi Sham, v'inyanim nistarim eila nichlom v'mislo Shabbos nistavim Hashem pi HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'galosam l'yechidei Yisrael. Right? These esoteric aspects of Shabbos, Moshe Rabbeinu was told to share with individuals in Klal Yisrael. There it says, speak to Bnei Yisrael, which implies the elite. But here he's talking to the masses. Here he just spoke to them about the simple level of the mitzvah, benigla, Shabbos, bilvad, v'derech k'sara, v'nei Moshe posach lanu pesach, mitoch dvar v'lahalim sisrei ha-Torah. And this is the source for the idea, again, that esoteric matters should be shared with the elite. You know, the general masses should have, you know, information, obviously, but it's not a good idea to put so much esoteric information into the hands of the masses. I guess to the Hamonam, I mean, there also, there's not much mention of Shabbos, meaning, you know, at Mara, it's mentioned Beremisa. Right? Parshas Hamon, basically all he tells them is that there's this thing called Shabbos, don't collect, the mon's not going to fall on that day. So, you know, when he's speaking there to the masses, he's really just speaking in very simple terms about Shabbos. And the same thing as well in the Aseret HaDibro, Zachos Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, really just puts forward that there is such a thing called Shabbos, and it reminds us of Maaseh Bereishis. Right? But Rabbi Bechai is saying that the Parshan Kisisa talks about the Sodos of Shabbos, and those Sodos of Shabbos are only given to the select few, not to the masses. And he then brings the following, and it's very interesting because he brings a version of the Medrash which is similar to something we have in our Gemaras, but not exactly the same, significantly different. For Od Raya, this idea that you shouldn't share esoteric information with the masses, you can see in the Gemara that says Mashadasha Maseches Megillah al Unkelus. It says concerning Unkelus, Kishatir Game HaTorah, when Unkelus wrote his Targum, his translation of the Torah, it says Yosisa Baskol VeAmra, a Baskol, a heavenly voice came out and said, Miu Shigala Sisarai Livnei Adam. Who is this person who revealed my secrets to the masses? Why was Unkelus so quick to write a translation of the Torah into Aramaic and thus reveal the secrets of the Torah? V'im b'targum ha-Torah kach, if, you know, the Rabbanu Shalom, so to speak, had a kpeda, was upset about translating the Torah, which you'd think is, you know, just sort of a basic thing. Kal v'chomer l'misha markiv b'ir yoser b'sisri ha-Torah v'pnei ha-amon shu'nikra megala story v'rachil megala son. How much more so is it inappropriate to share the secrets of the Torah with the masses beyond just the translation, you know, things that are really Sisrei Torah in the full sense of the term. The only thing is, if you look at our Gemara Megillah, that's not exactly what it says. The Gemara Megillah says that Unkelus translated the Torah, and then Yonasan ben Uziel came along and he translated the Nevi'im, and he was about to do Ksuvim as well, and then the Baskol came out and said, "Aye, how are you Megala, my starim, my secrets, to people?" And Yonasan ben Uziel got up and said, "Rabbanu Shalom, you know that I didn't do it for kavod, for my own kavod, I did it l'shem shamayim." And the sense that you get from the Gemara is that the Rabbanu Shalom was mekabel. In other words, he accepted, you know, that which Yonasan ben Uziel said. So that's not exactly the way Rabbeinu Bechaya presents it. Maybe he had a different version of the Gemara than we did. But, you know, Rabbeinu Bechaya presents the Rabbanu Shalom as being makbid, even on the Targum HaTorah, even on the translation of the Torah by Unkelus. And it doesn't sound like Unkelus defends himself in the version of the Gemara that Rabbeinu Bechaya has. You know, so that, of course, raises the question. I mean, you know, so Rabbeinu Bechaya didn't have Targum Unkelus in his Chumashim. They ripped it out in his shul. I mean, l'chara not. You need the Targum Unkelus to be mekayim the idea of Shtayim Mikra V'yachad Targum. Right? So, you know, I don't think Rabbeinu Bechaya is suggesting, so therefore we should backtrack on the Targum of Unkelus. But nonetheless, even on the Targum of Unkelus, there was a little bit of a kpeda in his version of the story on the part of the Rabbanu Shalom, that even a translation, to some extent, makes things available that maybe shouldn't be made available so readily. So if that's true of a translation, a lot, and Unkelus, by the way, is one of the most pshat-oriented translations that's out there, right? I mean, he really, you know, brings very little in terms of, you know, interpretation. Most of Unkelus is just, you know, translating the words, you know, on the level of Pashat Pshat. Even when the Torah Shebaal Peh says something different than the Torah Shebiksav, usually Unkelus sticks with the Torah Shebiksav, you know, the literal translation. If even on that there's a kpeda, so then alachas kama v'kama to reveal real Sisrei Torah, says Rabbeinu Bechaya, you know, that's something which is inappropriate. Right? So that idea Rabbeinu Bechaya learns out from his understanding of in the beginning of Parashas Vayakel. Right, so certainly you can understand why, according to Rabbeinu Bechaya, there's such a negative attitude in Chazal towards the Targum HaShivim, to the point at which we say that darkness descended on the world for 3 days when the Targum HaShivim was composed. The tainus of Asar B'Teves, to some extent, relates to that translation of the Torah. Because any time there's a translation, there's a gilui starim, there's a revelation of things to the masses, and there's something wrong with that. So what's taka wrong with that? Why is it so bad to have a translation? So I suspect, you know, Rabbeinu Bechaya might say as follows. If a person has a translation of Torah, he feels that he doesn't need a Rebbe. Right, I can just, you know, I don't need a Rebbe to tell me what it says. Right, I do it on my own. Right, you know, I'll turn on the internet. I'll, you know, Google Ask Moses, and I'll know everything I need to know. You know, I can ask Moses. Why do I have to ask you know, Rabbi Levine, I can ask Moses. I mean, Moses got the Torah, right? I mean, that doesn't get better than that. So anytime you have a translation, okay, it's good on the one hand, but on the other hand, it weakens the relationship between a Talmud and a Rebbe, because the Talmud feels he could do it on his own. Alachas kama v'kama for Sisrei Torah, for the hidden things of Torah. Once you reveal them, you further, you know, lessen in people's eyes the need for a Rebbe, and there's something very, very dangerous about that. That's what Rebbe B'chai is saying from the get-go. You know, there was this idea of not revealing everything, which Moshe Rabbeinu practiced in his relationship with Klal Yisrael.
Instead of the 39 halachos, maybe with tying with Kol Adras Yisrael, if you're going to teach someone about Shabbos, that means they're going to have fire, and they can't cook. That's intertwined with cooking. Mm-hmm. So they're going to get their preparation for Shabbos beforehand, and for the masses of people, that's the beauty way in, that you Shabbos reached out to the week itself, and even though you're not teaching the other 38, but they're intertwined with the don't cook, so you're going to have the food prepared basically because you can't be cooking it.
So
there may be something that's for the masses of people to get them involved in the simplistic level of Shabbos.
Uh-huh.
You can't cook. It's one of the things when anyone comes to, oh, what's going on? It's already cooked before Shabbos.
Okay, so let's talk a build on that for a moment, because the Rebbe B'chai says something interesting with regard to that as well. So again, the pasuk, you know, that this is the one malacha that's really mentioned explicitly in Chumash, right? The Torah says you have to keep Shabbos. What does keeping Shabbos mean? You shouldn't burn a fire. So of course the obvious question is, okay, that's one out of the 39 malachas. How is Havaras Eish Zoche to be the one malacha which is actually explicitly mentioned in the Chumash, right? So Rebbe B'chai writes as follows. He says, in the next piece, it's actually a little bit into the next piece, it's on page Shin Samech Tes in the Shevel edition, the third line from the top. But it says, that's actually meant to include all the malachas. Ki biyodua shirov hamalachos shibnei adam is askim bohem en einam ela al yedei ho'esh. The majority of malachas, says Rabbi B'chai, that people are involved in, have something to do with fire. Ki ha'esh sibasam v'ikaram. Because esh is their ultimate source and their root. Right? So that's a very interesting. That happens to be a very, very interesting statement. That, and I'm curious, maybe someone has a suggestion as to why that's true. In 2014, interestingly enough, this actually is very true. In other words, you go to an average person on the street, you say, what does it mean to be a Shomer Shabbos? Right? List the things that make you a Shomer Shabbos. I don't turn the lights on and off, I don't turn the computer on and off. Right? Most people, when they're asked to define what does it mean that I'm a Shomer Shabbos, will talk in terms of /electricity. Right? Most of us are not winnowing on Shabbos. Most of us are not planting on Shabbos. Right? I can't tell you the last time Osa Shtei Bate Nirin, you know, came up on Shabbos as a, you know, as a shaila that people are concerned about. I mean, now they have, by the way, the kids have this thing with weaving rubber bands. It's like the latest fan. So all the rabbanim are saying, wow, you know, this has been the first time in hundreds of years that we actually have Ariga shailas on Shabbos. Well, since when do you have shailas with weaving on Shabbos? You know, I mean, if you're not actually out there with a loom, when else do you have to deal with Maisa Oreg on Shabbos? I mean, it's like a totally theoretical thing. So nowadays, in 2014, it's true that most of our Shmira Shabbos is wrapped up with the idea of Eish. But for Rabbeinu B'chaye to say that, hundreds of years ago, it's very, very striking. I mean, in the Middle Ages, most stuff had to do with Eish. I guess Rabbeinu B'chaye is saying, look, in a non-agricultural society, you know, most of what Shmira Shabbos, you know, pertains to is stuff that has to do with lighting fires, cooking, and the like, right? Rabbeinu B'chaye was already living in the city. You know, he was not a farmer. But, you know, the insight is fascinating because, if we go with the Mahalach of Rabbeinu B'chaye, the Torah is really being incredibly prophetic in this pasuk. Again, not surprising. It's written by the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? So the Ribbono Shel Olam is Yodea Asidos. Right? But the Ribbono Shel Olam writes, Shabbos means don't use fire, because the Ribbono Shel Olam is looking into the future and saying there will come a time where Shmirah Shabbos is primarily going to be defined by refraining from Esh. In the time of the Mishkan, it's hard to imagine that that would have been true. It was sort of true in the time of Rabbeinu B'chaye, and it's very, very true nowadays, right? But, you know, in the time of the Mishkan, I imagine if you're a farmer, or not in the time of the Mishkan Mamish, but when they came into Eretz Yisrael, and most people were preoccupied with farming, I don't know. I mean, I would think that refraining from Zriya and Harisha is much more an expression of Shmirah Shabbos than refraining from Esh, I would think. I mean, the truth is, the one pasuk, you know, back earlier in Shmos says Becharish u'Bakatzer Tishbos. For a farmer, those things probably were much more integral to your Shmirah Shabbos. The idea that Esh would be the focus of your Shmirah Shabbos is something that only developed later on in history. And yet, Rabbeinu B'chaye says that's what's going on here in the pasuk. In fact, says Rabbeinu B'chaye, the fact that Esh is in many ways the quintessential Melechus Shabbos, you know, the thing that everything else focuses on, explains a fascinating idea. He says, V'lochach tiknu lonu razal b'mitzvos havdala b'motzoi Shabbos shutchilas heter ha-melechos levarech al ha-esh borei me'orei ha-esh. That's why, by havdala, you know, Chazal told us that we should light a fire and say Bari Me'orei Ho'esh to indicate that Shabbos is over and the week is beginning, because Meleches Esh of all things is the quintessential Melacha. Right? They didn't tell us when Shabbos is over, go plant a seed to show that Shabbos is over. They said, go strike a match and light a fire. Now it's interesting, because the Gemara says that there's a slightly different reason as to why we light a fire on Motzei Shabbos. The Gemara says in Pesachim that Adam HaRishon created fire on Motzei Shabbos, so that's why we make a bracha bar me'orei ha'esh Motzei Shabbos. So clearly Rabbeinu B'chaye is not ignoring that, but nonetheless, Rabbeinu B'chaye is saying that there's a second element to why we make the bracha on fire Motzei Shabbos, and that's to signify that Shabbos is over, and now we can do melacha. And what's the exemplar of melacha? Motzei Shabbos. Now you see that Rabbeinu B'chaye is correct, because Motzei Yom Kippur, when there is no inyan of Adam HaRishon being Motzei Eish min Ha'avanim, you know, we nonetheless still, you know, make a bracha of Bar Me'orei Ha'esh to show that Yom Kippur is over. So you see that there's this concept of Bar Me'orei Ha'esh showing that Malacha is now Mutter, and again this goes back to the idea that Eish in many ways is the quintessential Malacha, right? Yeah.
It's just interesting that they don't burn the fire in Gehenna
either. Right. You know, the Eish, you know, even down below, the Eish stops on Shabbos, right? You know, so. Right. Also, Varu Eish B'chomosh will say, right? Right? Yeah.
So we may be a return. If the main thing, you mentioned when they came into Israel, but when they were in the Midbar, they weren't involved with doing any of the Zuzari
right.
or anything like that.
Right.
So we're returning back to the dormant,
right.
being essential.
Right.
But also, if you're at home and you want to do some weaving or anything of that sort, and it's at nighttime, you need the fire. So fire is almost a prerequisite for when it's dark to have the fire lit to see to do the halacha.
No, it is interesting. Right. So that Dafka going back to the Dor HaMidbar. You know, for them, Esh really was the main expression of Malacha, because again, Zriya, Harisha, you know, they weren't plowing, they weren't sowing, they weren't doing all of those sort of things. You know, the Ribbono Shel Olam was providing for all their needs. So what was the one thing that they had to do on their own? I mean, one of the few things I guess they did on their own was Esh. You know, they made Esh for fire, for warmth, you know, for cooking and whatever they did with it. So, you know, in a sense, we're really going back to the Dor HaMidbar. That's
what
correct.
So he was
gathering sticks.
Oh, he was gathering sticks.
He was gathering sticks, right. So he writes, it's fascinating, he says, that
gathering sticks for a fire.
Right. Well, maybe. V'nei arba brachos ha-havdala reshumo sham l'chomaska. He says something very, very cute. Very, just very, very nice. He says, the four brachos we make by havdala are hinted at in the first day of creation, that we find in the very beginning of Chumash. How so?
Birkas Hayayin removes the heat, but Pasuk Breishis. The very first Pasuk we find the bracha on Yayin, how so? The Milas Ha'aretz. Right, when it says that Breishis Bar Elokim Eisa Shomayim V'Eisa Aretz, so the Aretz refers to Hu Agan. That refers, what was the Aretz that was made? That was Gan Eden. Vegefen Bagan. And of course, there's a vine, you know, and grapes in the garden. And that's Chazal talk about this wine that has been sitting around from the beginning of time, of the Sheshes Yimei Breishis. So that's the Ores that was created right in the beginning. That's the primordial wine. Birkas Atzei Besamim Remusa B'milas V'ruach Elokim Ki Areach Behem Sol Sol Ruach V'hu Avir Shish Afo Adam O Avir V'yachnis Oso B'chotmo. Right, the bracha and besamim is hinted at in the ruach Elokim, because reach and ruach are of course related to one another. How do you get a reach into your nose? Through the act of the wind, which is pulled in when you sniff. That's how the reach comes in. That's reach and ruach are related to one another. And parenthetically, Rabbi Shavel points out over here, the Rabbeinu Bechai talks about making a bracha not on bar minei besamim, but on bar atzei besamim. In other words, he apparently, like many even do today, had the minhag of making the bracha on hadassim or the like on Motzei Shabbos, chassidim, sardim. You know, it's a common custom in some of those circles. So, you know, he made the bracha bari atzei besam, not bari minei besam. Okay. Va'od minash yodua ki harucha usmaniyos sareach. Good. Ma'orei ho'esh nemar yehi or. Right? In the beginning of Bereishis, the first thing that's created is light. Right, so me'orei ho'esh refers to that light which was created, and finally hamavdu ben kodesh lechol shenemar vayavdel Elokim ben orah ben achoshech. This havdala, you know, the brach of havdala is this havdala right in the beginning of time. God is mavdil between the or and the choshech, and he quotes as well in the notes that the Mate Moshe quotes this from Rabbeinu Bechaye, and he adds, if Vayavdel Elokim ben Ha'or ben Achoshech hints to the idea of Havdalah, so consider the following. Vayavdel B'Gematria is 52, the number of Havdalos that are made during the year, at least Havdalos on Moshe Shabbos, that are made during the course of the year, leaving aside the Havdalah of Yom Tov. Havdalah Yom Tov doesn't have these four elements, but the Havdalos that have the in, that have these four elements, typical year is going to be 52. Right? So again, a leap year is a different story. Okay, but in a typical year you're going to have 52. So, you know, that works out as well in terms of you know, in terms of what's that? Right, so I guess he's working with the Minyan Yemos, with the Yemos Achama. Right. Average year, right, on average. Right. Right, right. Right, sorry about the solo years, right? So. Right, no, but right, because the, you know, the Jewish year on average comes out to be a solo year when you factor in, you know, every 2 or 3 years the right. Right, right. Okay, right, no, but again, the solar year, which is the average ultimately of the Jewish year, so it comes out to be Vayavdil. All right, yes, it's a remes, you know, so a remes. I don't know if you could ask so many kashas about, but again, a very beautiful idea that Havdalah is introduced on the first day of Ma'aseh Bereishis, if you just know where to look within the Psukim.
Did we answer why H is singled out?
So again, I can only say, you know, to understand Rabbeinu Bechaye, that again, perhaps back in the time of the Mishkan, where they didn't have Zriya and Harisha and all these sort of things, right? So Eish Taka was the quintessential Malacha. But look how prophetic it is that, you know, looking down the line, again, 2014, Eish really is the quintessential Malacha. That, you know, when a person defines himself as a Shomer Shabbos, he does so in relation to his, you know, usage or failure to use electricity on Shabbos, right? It's all Eish. Everything today is Eish. So, you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam is giving us really a prophetic hint into the future. Right, no, the elevator, the telephone, you know, everything. It's all, you know. How many people say I'm a Shomer Shabbos? I don't plant, right? I'm not. Right. Everything, right? So you know,
don't light up,
right? So everything today. I mean, a person Shomer Shabbos is defined in terms of age. I mean, that really is the, you know, the defining attribute nowadays. Okay. A few other little pieces in Rabbeinu B'chaye. So just going forward a little bit, Lamed Hey Chav Zayin, it describes how Nesiyim Heviu as Avnei HaShoham. Right? The Nesiyim contributed the Avonim, which were used for the Ephod, which had the names of Klal Yisrael on them, as well as the Avonim, the Avnei Miluim, which were used on the Choshen as well. Now, Rabbeinu B'chaye quotes the famous Medrash that the Nesiyim ended up bringing these Avonim sort of as an afterthought, as the Nesiyim held back, and they said, we'll be mashlim, we'll, you know, whatever isn't brought, you know, we'll fill in the end, and everything had been brought besides these Avonim. So the Nesiyim brought these Avonim, the Avnei Shoham, and the Avnei Miluim, but there's a little bit of a taina against the Nesiyim for having waited till the end to do so, and that's why the HaNesiyim is spelled Choser, without the Yud. So again, all of that is brought, is from Chazal, and is brought in Rashi. But the Rabbeinu B'chaye adds a point, he quotes all of this, but he adds an interesting point as well, which is not, you know, in Rashi. He says, a Nasi, or any kind of leader, is very, very susceptible to feel a sense of superiority over the rest of the people. Right? The Torah later on has to tell the Melech explicitly, don't feel like you're a big shot, the Vilti Rumla Vavome Echov. But any Jewish leader, any leader, you know, is going to naturally feel that sense of superiority. I'm better. That's why it turned out. In other words, it wasn't just by chance that the one thing which was left over for the Nesiyim to bring was the Avnei Shoham and the Avnei Miluim. That was all part of the Ashkocha, that they would bring these stones, because these stones sat on the Ephod and on the Choshen, and the stones of the Choshen that sat on the Lev Aaron were mechaper on the Gova Lev, on the sense of haughtiness which was so easy for the Nesiyim to fall prey to. That's why it says those Avonim, with the direct article, Kolomer Avnei HaShoham, the Avnei Hamiluim Shechasu Yisrael, right? The you know, these stones particularly related to what the Nesiyim needed Kapara for. So he writes, Rabbi Shavel writes in his notes, that this idea that the Nesiyim, you know, it was appropriate in a certain sense for the Nesiyim to bring Davka the Avonim that sat on the Lev Aaron because they needed Kapara for the Gova Lev, that idea ultimately stems from a Zohar. So Rabbeinu B'chaye doesn't quote the Zohar, but, you know, the source of that idea ultimately comes from a Zohar, that the Nesiyim need a little bit of help with humility, and the Avonim, you know, help them out in that regard.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
very nice. Shalom spells Moshe, and there's a hint to Anivus in that very pasuk as well. Very, very nice.
It says the Vaishmos, Varun Somach Beliba, when he
right.
gets greeted.
Right.
He's the older brother, and he's going to be happy that he's not going to be the leader. So right. Rashi says, Vikansha Somach Lebade Hachoshin.
Right.
In other words, he covered over his heart.
Right, humility.
Any form of gaiva wasn't there. He really humbled himself in front right. of his younger brother,
right, so there's this idea of humility with the Eifa, with the, you know, with the Choshen, and it's that kind of humility which is supposed to be conveyed to the Nesiyim. Okay, I just wanted to conclude a very beautiful passage that Rabbeinu B'chaye has at the very end of the Sedra. Perek Lamed Ches Pasuk Tes. It's the very last line. It's a few lines into the piece. It's the very last line of the page in the Shavel edition. Shinayin Dalid says, "Vida, you should know, ki hasipur beinah Mishkan v'chelof." Telling over the about how the Mishkan and the Kelim looked. V'hakira betchunas tzurosav muvav v'shiva arkan v'rochvan v'komasan.
and spending time contemplating and analyzing, you know, the exact setup and the build-up of the Mishkan. In other words, you know, a person might say, you know, why do we need to spend so much time learning about the Mishkan? I mean, after all, you know, the Mishkan is, I mean, of all the things, the Mishkan isn't even coming back. I mean, the Mishkan was a one-time event in history. You know, once the Mishkan was nignas, it's gone. It's, you know, so why do we need to spend time, you know, learning about the exact dimensions of the Mishkan? Even though the Beis HaMikdash is not around, the successor to the Mishkan, Mitzvah Gedolahi, Ad Shamayim Yagi Aschara, learning about the Mishkan and learning about the Mishkan, the Mikdash, is a tremendous mitzvah. The schar for this mitzvah reaches up to the heavens. It's Torah which we have to learn about. As Chazal can say concerning the Karbanos, called Misasik, believe in Parshios, if you learn about the Karbanos, it's like you bring a Karban. You know, even just saying over and learning about the Karbanos of the Mikdash, right? Learning about the carbon is like bringing the carbon. It's the same is true about learning about the Mishkan and the Mikdash. We derive tremendous reward from here. Even when we just try to understand the simple details of the Mishkan and the Mikdash, we get tremendous reward for that. How much more so if we're able to understand the Ramazim, the hints that are in the Mishkan and the Mikdash? Rabbeinu Bechai has shared some with us over the past couple of parashios, but he says, you know, if you even just figure out what the menorah looked like without getting any of the Ramazim and the Nistar. Or anything of that nature, you know, it's still a tremendous thing. And certainly if you get, you know, a deeper understanding of the hints that are that are contained therein.
How do we equate that with the Kabbalos, though? Kabbalos, every individual was supposed to be involved in Kabbalos. The building of the Mishkan was only for designated few.
So right.
By learning about the makeup of the Mikdash, of the Mishkan, we have...
Well, the truth is, you know, so through learning about the Mikdash, each of us does play a role. In other words, you know, it's true that only certain people were involved in the building of the Mishkan and the Mikdash, but nonetheless, they represented the Klal, right? So they represent us. And the truth is, that's true with the Karbanos as well. Many Karbanos were not brought by the individual. The Karban Talmud was brought, you know, by the Kohen every morning, but it represented Klal Yisrael. So in other words, we can plug in when we learn about the building of the Mishkan. It's if we built it, right? It's the mitzvah of Binyan HaMikdash is on the collective, not on the individual, but the individual can participate to the extent to which he learns about the Mikdash. And then he says a beautiful pshat, a pshat in a pasuk which is well known to us, so, you know, I think it's worthwhile, you know, for many reasons just to focus on the pshat. Consider the following pasuk in Tehillim, which is the Shir Shalom for Monday. Sobu Tzion Vakifuha Sifru Migdaleha. Circle Tzion, count its towers, Shisu Libchem Lecheila, you know, pay attention to its strength, Pasku Arminoseha, count your steps around its palaces, Leman Tesafru Ledor Acharon, in order that you should tell over this to the future generations. Now, what is this pasuk talking about? The simple pshat of the pasuk is that David HaMelech is talking about Sion in the sense of Yerushalayim. Right? Walk around Yerushalayim, see how great it is, and you'll tell over the future generations about the strength of Yerushalayim. But Sion is a somewhat ambiguous word. Sion can also refer to the Mikdash specifically. And Rabbeinu Bechai says David HaMelech is talking not about Yerushalayim generally. He's not saying, you know, he's not talking about the division of parks in Yerushalayim, you know, or the housing department, that they have to go and count the walls. Sobu Tzion Vakifua means go and learn the laws of the Mikdash. walk around Sion, not physically, walk around Sion by pulling out a Rambam, Hilchos Beis HaBechira, and walk around it virtually by trying to get a sense of what the Beis HaMikdash looked like and how it operated. Learn Hilchos Beis HaMikdash. That's Sobut Sion Bakifua. Circle it in a virtual sense, in an intellectual sense. Leman to Safru L'dor Acharo, so that you can tell the future generations what the Mikdash looked like. In Vizchus Hasibu V'Heke V'Niglo V'Nistar, and says the Rabbeinu B'Chaye, this tour of the Mikdash means to tour it in neglect, to understand what it looked like. It means to tour it in Nistar, to tour it in the sense of understanding what it represented. If you do that, Yashiv Shechinasa, the Shechina will come back, and that's the next pasuk. This is God, who is our God forever and ever. How is God going to be our God forever and ever? In the schus of learning, Hilchos Beis HaBechira, in the schus of learning, the halachas of the Beis HaMikdash, God is going to lead us forever and ever. God is going to lead us till death, you know, till forever, right? And this notion of God returning and being our leader, the Hashroas HaShechina, will come about the schus, learning the halachas and the inyanim that pertain to the Beis HaMikdash. Again, a very beautiful pshat. I think it's his own pshat, but a very beautiful pshat in a familiar pasuk in Sefer Tehillim. Again, one we say every Monday. I don't know, maybe in the schus of this pshat, we should designate Mondays as being Beis HaMikdash Day. Mm-hmm. You know, we should learn a halacha from, about Hilchos Beis HaBechira, you know, on Mondays. But the kids are, whether we do that or not, certainly it's a very beautiful idea and a beautiful pshat in a pasuk which is well known to us.
Well, the Rebbe always said that Monday is Yom Yerushalayim. Every Monday is Yom Yerushalayim.
Oh, very, very nice.
Doesn't Sion mean like a cycle, like something that just gets focused in on?
Yeah, Sion is related to the word litzayin, you know, to point something out, to mark something. So, you know, that which is marked in the ultimate sense is the Mikdash, because it's marked in a beautiful way. Okay, we will pick up next. We'll pick up next Wednesday night. Bez Hashem.